From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
He doesn't need a permission slip from the UN. He doesn't think he needs votes from the American people to be president.
The flock flies south. Democrats debate in South Carolina. We'll focus on their arguments over weapons of mass deception. Destruction.
This president broke every one of those promises to the American people. He rushed to war. He did not build a legitimate coalition. He did not exhaust the remedies of the inspections. He did not go to war as a last resort. And I think he fails the test of a commander-in-chief.
And in Britain, we'll look at the Hutton Report, which clears the prime minister and blames the BBC.
Well, it looks like Tony Blair has been saved by the Lord, this time Lord Hutton, so far.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Less than 2 months after Congress approved overhauling the nation's Medicare system, the White House says the new plan will cost $130 billion more than previously stated over the next 10 years. At the time of the vote, Congress was assured the 10-year cost would not exceed $400 billion. But yesterday, the White House estimated the cost will be at least $530 billion, roughly a third more. The bill was passed by a narrow 220 to 215 vote in the House. The New York Times reports the bill may not have been approved if lawmakers saw the more than half-trillion-dollar price tag. Democrats said much of the added costs go to drug manufacturers and insurers. Senator Edward Kennedy of Massachusetts said, quote, "The news on the Republican Medicare bill gets better and better for drug company profits and HMOs and worse for seniors and the Medicare program." Conservative Republicans said this was one more example of Bush's out-of-control spending problem. Overall, federal spending has increased by 20% since 2000, while revenues have declined. Gail Wilensky, a Republican health economist who ran the Medicare program in the first Bush administration, said, quote, "I'm not sure I've ever heard of such a big discrepancy weeks after legislation is passed." The Financial Times is reporting the U.S. has suffered considerably more combat deaths in January than in December. To date, 33 U.S. soldiers have been killed this month by hostile fire. In December, 24 U.S. soldiers were killed. This comes as the head of the U.S. Central Command, General John Abizaid, predicted Thursday there would be, quote, "a lot of fighting ahead." He said, quote, "The clear thing I understand as a military commander is whether we have elections or not, as we move toward an Iraqi sovereign authority, we're going to have increased levels of violence." In the southern Iraqi city of Nasiriyah, 10,000 Shiite Muslims demonstrated Wednesday to demand that the U.S.-appointed regional governor be fired. In Afghanistan, 7 U.S. soldiers died Thursday in an explosion at an ammunition dump southwest of Kabul. The cause of the explosion is not known. It was one of the deadliest days for U.S. forces since they invaded Afghanistan 2 years ago. Meanwhile, the Taliban has taken credit for carrying out separate suicide bombing attacks in Kabul earlier this week that killed a British soldier and a Canadian soldier. And a U.S. military spokesperson said Thursday that the military is, quote, "sure it will catch Osama bin Laden this year." The U.S. military has released from Guantanamo Bay 3 teenage boys aged between 13 and 15 years old. The boys had been captured in early 2003 in Afghanistan. Approximately 7 more teenagers are still being held at the base. William Schultz, the executive director of Amnesty International, said, quote, "The detention of children as enemy combatants and their interrogation without even the basic safeguards to which they were entitled was a significant violation of human rights." The Bush administration is threatening to veto any move by Congress to scale back portions of the Patriot Act. In a letter to Senator Orrin Hatch, Attorney General John Ashcroft warned that weakening the Patriot Act, quote, would make it even more difficult to mount an effective anti-terror campaign than it was before the Patriot Act was passed. Israeli forces raided the West Bank town of Bethlehem for the first time in 6 months and demolished the home of a Palestinian man who they say carried out Thursday's bus bombing in Jerusalem that killed 10 people. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities is calculating that a record high 375,000 jobless workers will exhaust their unemployment insurance this month. An estimated 2 million workers will lose benefits over the first 6 months of this year. On the campaign front, John Kerry received a boost in South Carolina with the endorsement of the state's only African-American Congress member, James Clyburn. In South Carolina, all seven Democratic contenders took part in a debate Thursday night. John Kerry claimed Bush had failed as commander-in-chief. He said, quote, he didn't go to war as a last resort. I think he fails the test of the commander-in-chief. Meanwhile, Kerry's Senate record came under criticism from Howard Dean, who pointed out Kerry had failed in passing 11 health care bills that he had written. We'll hear from that debate in a minute.
Court, you're looking for the same thing. It's a new thing. Check out this I bring. Uh-oh, the rope below the level, cause I'm living low next to the base.
Come on!
Turn up the radio. They're claiming I'm a criminal. But now I wonder how. Some people never know. The enemy could be the Frank Guardian. I'm now a hooligan. I rock the party and clear all the madness. I'm not a racist priest to teach the
cause some they never had this.
Number one, never wanna run about the gun. I wasn't licensed to have one. The minute they see me, fear me, I'm the epitome, a public enemy, used, abused, without clues, I refuse to blow a fuse, they even had it on the news.
Don't believe the hype, don't believe the hype, don't believe the hype.
Yes, was the start of my last jam, so here it is again, another death jam, but since I gave you all a little something that I knew you lacked, they still consider me a new jack. All the critics you can hang on my hold the rope, but they hope to the Pope and pray it ain't dope. The follower of Farrakhan, don't tell me that you understand until you hear the man.
Don't believe the hype, Public Enemy, here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Welcome.
And good day to all of our listeners and viewers around the country.
Juan, you had an interesting piece in the New York Daily News yesterday about Howard Dean saying he's not done by a long shot.
Yes, well, I attempted to look at some of the things that aren't being touched on, even as people are looking at Dean's decline in terms of being the front runner. One is that we're not dealing with the reality that Dean has already transformed this political campaign tremendously in terms of the fact that so many of the other Democratic candidates are already speaking like Dean in order to be able to head him off. Two is the enormous impact he's had on the democratization of the fundraising aspect of a presidential campaign, getting many more people involved. And as one Harlem councilman, Bill Perkins, said, he has shown us a new way to be able not to have to depend on fat cats in these types of political campaigns. And finally, I think that the reality is that this race is far from over. The fact is that if the delegate count right now, Dean is ahead in the delegate counts. The numbers, it was 115 to 197 to 97 for Kerry. As of 2 days ago, according to this AP count, because of all the super delegates that have already gone for Dean, and that the largest group of delegates, about a third of them, 1,152, will be chosen when the big states, New York, California, Ohio, speak on March 2nd. And I think that's what Dean is attempting to get to. So I think that there's a lot about this campaign. Of course, the mass media, especially television, have an interest in winnowing the field because they're spending a lot of money covering all of these candidates. And they'd love to be able to reduce the numbers to reduce their budgets, their coverage budgets over the year because all these Democratic candidates are breaking the bank for these networks in terms of the need of the amount of money they've got to spend on coverage.
In fact, the Times calling for Kucinich to pull out.
And also saying that Kucinich and Sharpton should be no longer in the debates, when the reality is that Kucinich and Sharpton, week after week, keep raising issues in these debates that the other candidates are not raising. And in fact, I think that these debates have been among the most educational and clarifying of issues of any that I can recall, going back to 1960, the presidential debate when I was a kid. So I think that the debates have been very healthy. They've clarified all these issues. And the other thing, I think, is the reality that so many people are coming out to vote that it's clear that the main person that needs to be worried is the person in the White House, because the Democrats are furious. No matter who they're supporting, they're going to be coming out in droves in November.
You also, in the Daily News, they're also talking about Dennis Rivera's what switch. Dennis Rivera, a major union leader in New York and on the national scene.
Yes, and they put his article right next to my column. He's a good friend of mine, but Dennis is a
service employee, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the head of the 140,000 member union of 1199 SEIU, and has about $35 million that he's put into this campaign, 1,000 organizers around the country. And he was the first to come out for Dean. All of a sudden, he told the Daily News editorial board a couple of days ago that I'm having doubts. I'm not sure if Dean is a viable candidate. Of course, the problem is he hasn't talked to any of his union leadership about this, and they were as surprised as the Daily News editorial board was.
And they were everywhere in New Hampshire.
Yes, yes, they were. They had a lot of people there, and they're in South Carolina as well. The other thing I think is important to know about the upcoming primaries, everyone's focusing on South Carolina, but I think it's also instructive to look at New Mexico, because New Mexico is the only majority-minority state in the nation. It's 42% Hispanic population, 11% Native American population. And how New Mexico goes is going to begin the first indication of how the Latino community across the country is looking at all of these different Democratic candidates. And my understanding is, from talking to some of the political leaders there, that they were only expecting about 50,000 people to turn out in the primary. They got 30,000 requests for mail ballots. And more than 20,000 are already in for this campaign. And they suspect that a lot of those are Dean supporters, because Dean had the biggest organization on the ground in New Mexico. So already two-thirds of the mail ballots for next week's primary have come in. So they're expecting a huge turnout in New Mexico.
Well, we are going to first go to the debate in South Carolina. The candidates debated in South Carolina last night, 6 days before the South's first primary. South Carolina votes next Tuesday in the 2004 campaign's biggest day yet, the same day primary elections in Delaware, Missouri, Arizona, North Dakota, Oklahoma, and caucuses in New Mexico. The debate, which was moderated by NBC's Tom Brokaw, remained civil, with the candidates spending most of their time criticizing foreign and domestic policies of the Bush administration instead of criticizing each other, as they've been doing in the past.
The Iraq War dominated large parts of the evening, but there were few disagreements among the candidates. Senators John Edwards and John Kerry and Howard Dean all called for an independent commission to investigate the intelligence on which Bush argued that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction.
We go now to that debate that took place in Greenville, South Carolina, at the Peace Center for Performing Arts.
Governor Dean, you said appropriately enough that you really did bring Iraq into this campaign in a very dramatic fashion. All this week, we've been hearing from David Kaye, who was the chief U.S. weapons inspector in Iraq, saying that the intelligence was almost all wrong. He's now called for an independent commission to investigate what in fact went wrong. And at a hearing before the Armed Services Committee the other day, Senator Edward Kennedy said there was a deliberate manipulation of the intelligence. You said that the books were cooked. Cooking the books means that there was a fraud of some kind in an attempt to achieve something that wasn't in fact true. David Kaye has said that wasn't the case. He thinks the president was just simply abused by the intelligence agencies.
Well, I don't think anybody knows for sure, and that's why I support the idea of an independent commission. What we do know is this. The president was not candid with the American people when we went to war. It's why I did not support going to war, even though I did support the first Gulf War and I did support the Afghanistan War. I simply didn't believe what the president was saying. What we now find out is that Vice President Dick Cheney went to the CIA on at least one occasion and maybe more, sat with middle-level CIA operatives and berated them because he didn't like their intelligence reports. It seems to me that the Vice President of the United States therefore influenced the very reports that the President then used to decide to go to war and to ask Congress for permission to go to war. That is precisely that kind of thing is what I suspected. That kind of thing is why I've stood up so strongly against the war. I'm very proud of our military. They've done an outstanding job. I think our military ought to be used when we need to use our military. The President himself and the Secretary of State have recently admitted that there was no connection between Saddam Hussein and 9/11, that there was no connection and no evidence of connection between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. In that case, why are we in Iraq, and why are so many people from South Carolina there right now when they should be home concentrating on homeland security and when they should be going after Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda?
But in fairness, David Kaye also told me the other day that he thinks now, looking back, that the 2 years before he went to war was the most dangerous period in Iraq in a long, long time, because it was spinning out of control. Saddam Hussein was not in charge. There were people coming in and going out of the country, including well-known terrorists. You saw the defense, you saw the national intelligence estimate, Senator Edwards, as a member of the Intelligence Committee. Did you believe it when you saw it, and was that the basis for your vote, which you enthusiastically talked about when you made the vote to authorize war against Iraq?
Well, it wasn't just the national intelligence estimate. It was a whole year. It was actually 2 or 3 years of sitting in briefings and receiving information from the Intelligence Committee, not only about the weapons issue, which is what Howard just talked about, but also about the atrocities that Saddam was committing against his own people, gassing Kurdish children in northern Iraq. And that was the basis for it. And I have to say, I think it is not for the administration to get to the bottom of this. It's actually not for the Congress to get to the bottom of this. We, the American people, we need to get to the bottom of this with an independent commission that looks at, that will have credibility, and that the American people will trust about why there is this discrepancy about what we were told and what's actually been found there.
Senator Kerry, Governor Dean has made a very serious charge against the Vice President, saying that he went to the CIA. We know that he did that. But do you believe that he berated middle-level people at the intelligence agency to, in effect, shape the intelligence that he wanted?
There is a very legitimate question, Tom, about what the Vice President of the United States was doing at the CIA. There's an enormous question about the exaggeration by this administration. But the most important point, and I think this is the larger issue of how you choose somebody to run and to be President of the United States, the President gave guarantees not just to the Congress and to the American people, but to the world about how he would conduct himself as President. He said he would build a legitimate global coalition. He said he would respect the United Nations inspection process and work through it. And he said to the American people he would go to war only as a last resort. I will tell you, and I think General Clark will share this, that those who've been to war know that the words last resort are important. This president broke every one of those promises to the American people. He rushed to war. He did not build a legitimate coalition. He did not exhaust the remedies of the inspections. He did not go to war as a last resort. And I think he fails the test of a commander-in-chief, and I intend to hold him accountable in this election, because the American people's pockets are being picked to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars, and our troops are at greater risk than they needed to be. And we deserve leadership that knows how to take a nation to war if you have to.
Senator Lieberman, do you think that Libya would have given up its weapons of mass destruction if the United States had not invaded Iraq?
That's a very important question. I seriously doubt whether Libya would have given up its weapons of mass destruction if we had not overthrown Saddam Hussein. I seriously doubt if the Iranians would have allowed international inspectors to come in and look at their nuclear weapons sites if we had not done that. We live in a dangerous world. I've been a senior member of the Armed Services Committee of the Senate. I've worked to keep our military strong and to know that in a dangerous world, sometimes you have to use it, that power, against dangerous people. The statements that this administration made before the war, The questions we now have about the intelligence about weapons of mass destruction, the failure of the Bush administration to be prepared for what to do after we overthrew Saddam, have all unfortunately given a bad name to a just war. But the fact is, Saddam Hussein himself was a weapon of mass destruction. He mass murdered hundreds of thousands of people, did support terrorists, did hate the United States, did attempt to assassinate former President Bush. So I will never waver in my conclusion that the world and America are safer with Saddam Hussein in prison and not in power, and thanks to the American military for bringing that result about.
General Clark, your friend Congressman Kucinich would pull the United States troops out of Iraq right away and go to the UN and say, you go in and take over the peacekeeping there. Would you tell him about what happened when we had UN peacekeepers in Bosnia?
Tom, you've mischaracterized my position.
Well, tell me what you would do.
My position is that we go to the United Nations with a whole new direction, where the United States gives up control of the oil, control of the contracts, control of ambitions to privatize Iraq, gives up to the United Nations all that on an interim basis to be handled on behalf of the Iraqi people until the Iraqi people are self-governing. Furthermore, we would ask that the UN handle the elections and the construction of a constitution for the Iraqi people. When the UN agrees with that, at that point, we ask UN peacekeepers to come in and rotate our troops out. We'd help to fund it, we would help pay to rebuild Iraq, and we would give reparations to those innocent civilian non-combatants who lost their lives, to their families.
I shortcut several of the steps that you would make, but nonetheless, you would turn over the security of eventually to UN peacekeepers.
On an interim basis, until the Iraqi people can be self-governing.
Well, Tom, I'll tell you what I think we should do with Iraq right now. We're going to have to form an international organization to take the burden off the United States. The president's playing politics with national security when he says we'll be out by the 30th of June. That's just an arbitrary date related to the presidential election. It's not related to what's going on the ground. We need an international organization. We need to be able to bring every nation in that wants to help. We need to pull Bremer out. We need to put the U.S. forces there underneath NATO. But I want to go back to the question you raised a minute ago about Iraq, because I heard from the Pentagon 2 weeks after 9/11 that the administration was determined to go into Iraq whether or not there was any connection with 9/11, that they were going to use it as a pretext for invading Iraq. And that was common knowledge in Washington. There should never have been a congressional authorization for the president to have a blank check to take this country to war, because everybody knew that's what he intended to do, and they knew what the timetable was. It was a politically motivated timetable to go in the 30th of March, just like this 30th of June date. We've got to change this government. We've got a president who's playing politics with national security, and we need to hold him accountable. And that's what I want to do.
Reverend Sharpton.
I think that we cannot go quickly past the president giving the wrong premise to the American public to get support. Had he said, we're going to war because Saddam Hussein is a bad guy, the public would not have rallied around that. We were told, in the wake of 9/11, we were in imminent danger with weapons of mass destruction. We cannot allow him to change this now and say we were just after Hussein because he was a bad guy. Everybody knows Hussein was a bad guy. And there are other bad guys who we didn't go after and we didn't lie about it. I preached the funeral of a young man, Darius Jennings, who died shot down in a helicopter in Iraq. I preached right here in Orangeburg, South Carolina. His mother was told he went to war to protect us from weapons of mass destruction. She was not told he went to war because we have a bad guy over there, because there's any number of bad guys. We should find a way to get rid of bad guys, but lying to the American people is not the way you run a country, and George Bush ought to be removed for that.
The Reverend Al Sharpton here at the debate in South Carolina, Greenville, the Peace Center for the Performing Arts. You are listening to Democracy Now! When we come back, we'll have a discussion about the issue of weapons of mass destruction. David Kaye saying, we were almost all wrong. We'll speak with a former CIA agent, and then we'll look at the scandal in Britain around the Hutton Report, the BBC, and Prime Minister Blair.
Ah! can my good man be? When it rains in here, it's storming on the sea. When it rains in here, it's storming on the sea.
Stormy Blues, Billie Holiday here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Juan?
Well, the comments of former Chief U.S. Weapons Inspector David Kay since his resignation last week have become a pivotal issue in the debate over the Bush administration's justification for invading Iraq. The former weapons inspector has also become a major reference point for the Democratic candidates vying for the party's nomination. Kay said this week that an independent investigation should be conducted into what he called the flawed intelligence over Iraq's weapons capability. Kay said the intelligence was, quote, fundamentally flawed but was not deliberately distorted. Kay's call came during testimony before the Senate Armed Services Committee. The Bush administration dismissed the idea of an independent investigation and said inspections should continue.
The White House has sent National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice on the offensive in a series of interviews with large media outlets, in a significant shift from the administration's pre-war allegations about Saddam Hussein's possession of weapons of mass destruction. Rice has been saying, quote, when you're dealing with secretive regimes that want to deceive, you're never going to be able to be positive. We're joined right now to begin the discussion by Ray McGovern. He is a longtime analyst at the Central Intelligence Agency, was there for more than 25 years. He was one of the top daily briefers for Vice President George H.W. Bush. And, well, actually, David Kay also worked at the CIA. What is your response to the latest news? Yesterday's USA Today headline was, "We were almost all wrong. Ex-weapons chief, pre-war intelligence on Iraq, a sweeping failure." Ray McGovern.
Good morning, Amy. Amy, I just have to comment that I'm glad that David Kay has a very strong honest streak in him. It's a refreshing phenomenon here in Washington. And I'm also glad that he said almost all wrong, because there were those of us, many of us, including our movement, Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, who have a very good record, pre-war record, of warning about, well, about what Al Sharpton has the courage to call lies. For example, a memorandum to the president in March before the war was titled Forgery, Hyperbole, Half-Truth, colon, a Problem. And in that memo, we just rehearsed things we had already done. So it's refreshing to see that David Kay is an honest person, and he will say not everybody was deceived. Now, the other thing about David Kay is he happens to be a scientist. Now, we don't have too many scientists around. Scientists, and I'm not one, have a certain devotion to ground truth. He went out there fully expecting to find weapons of mass destruction, and he found none. And so he came back and he said, surprise, surprise, there are none. He didn't put a spin on it. He put a little spin on some of the aspects of it, but the core issue was, are there weapons of mass destruction? Were there some then? And the answer was, no, there were none. I have looked over, and my team has looked over 85% of the available locations or places where these would be found, and there are none, no weapons of mass destruction. Now, the reaction to this has achieved ludicrous proportions with Senator Warner, I have to say my senator here in Virginia, saying, well, that leaves 15%, Dr. Kay. Obviously, they must be those in those 15% places we haven't looked yet. Well, David Kay's successor gives the lie to that. He commented earlier this month that the prospects of finding weapons of mass destruction are virtually nil, and that's a direct quote. So the president has a real, real problem on his hands, and I'm glad you finished with Al Sharpton, because I had a question that I was asking myself this morning. What do the Reverend Al Sharpton and Ambassador Joseph Wilson have in common. And one is rather ebullient, as you see, and the other is a consummate diplomat. Well, the answer is that both are so outraged at the 500-plus servicemen and women losing their lives and the over 6,000 wounded, not to mention Iraqi casualties, in an unprovoked war justified by a pack of deliberate lies. They're so outraged at that, they're willing to say the words lie and president in the same sentence. Ambassador Wilson did that back in July, and he also said in July to the Washington Post, quote, this Iraq-Niger search for uranium hoax begs the question with respect to what else they are lying about, and that was throwing down the gauntlet, and that is why they went after his wife. So it's nice to have some people, even consummate diplomats, willing to say presidents lie when they decide to make a war, and what they do usually, and I know this from personal experience, is they get the intelligence agencies, if they have a malleable director of central intelligence, like Richard Helms back in Vietnam, and like the fellow now, then they persuade that person to cook up the intelligence to the recipe of high policy, and you have total corruption in the intelligence community.
Ray McGovern, I'd like to ask you, in an article that was posted on the website of TomPaine.com, you mentioned something that has not gotten very much attention here, the decision of the Australian Senate to formally censure their Prime Minister, John Howard, for misleading the country on Iraq weapons of mass destruction. What is your sense of the impact? Because this is having a bombshell effect in this country. What is your sense of the impact around the world of these revelations of David Kaye?
Well, Tony Blair was prancing around 2 days ago with the whitewash that the Hutton Commission produced in his favor. But check in London in another week when the repercussions of this Kaye report come into play. Tony Blair, in my view, his political future is finished. That's not to say that they will depose him immediately, but sooner or later, and I say in the coming months, the Labour Party will do what they usually do and just move him aside. In Australia, John Howard enjoys immense popularity, but even so, the very disparate group of minority parties in their Senate was able to get together and prove, with the help of Andrew Wilkie, who was the Australian intelligence analyst who had the bravery and the courage to quit 9 days before the war and go public immediately about the lies. With Wilkie's help, the Senate got their act together and they issued a very rare official censure of the government on two counts. One for misleading the Australian people with respect to weapons of mass destruction, and number two, overlooking and suppressing an Australian intelligence report that said, if we make war on Iraq, terrorism will increase exponentially. It will not decrease. On both those counts, very important in all countries, the Australian Senate found John Howard guilty. I'm not surprised, Juan, that you didn't know about that, because, surprise, surprise, the U.S. media totally suppressed that, and it happened 3 months ago.
We're talking to former CIA analyst Ray McGovern with the agency for more than a quarter of a century. We wanted to play for you a clip of a news conference this week, one of the standard daily briefings of White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan being questioned by ABC's Terry Moran and Helen Thomas.
David Kaye said on the Hill today that he supports the idea of an independent investigation into the intelligence failures about what Iraq had in terms of weapons. Does the administration support David Kaye's idea, or support that idea too?
Yeah, Terry, I think that David Kaye has also publicly talked about the importance of letting the Iraq Survey Group complete its work. The Iraq Survey Group, the mission of the Iraq Survey Group is to find the truth. That work is ongoing. They did provide a progress report, I would remind you, which showed that Saddam Hussein's regime was indeed in material breach of Security Council Resolution 1441. So it's important that we let the Iraq Survey Group complete their work, gather all the facts that they can. Then we can go back and compare what we knew before the war with what we've learned since. But that work is ongoing at this point. I would point out that the CIA has publicly talked about the fact that they have an internal process where they go and review their intelligence, and that's something that is ongoing at this point as well. It's important that we gather all the facts, that we look at all that information and compare it to what we knew before the war. That's important. So, but first, before we can draw firm conclusions, we need to let the Iraq Survey Group complete its work. But at the same time, the CIA is already looking into the intelligence as well.
Well, but the CIA obviously is an independent commission. Do you think that the idea of a CIA or of an independent commission is incompatible with letting the Iraq Survey Group complete its work?
Well, again, I think our position at this point, we want the Iraq Survey Group to complete the important work that it has undertaken. That work is still a work in progress. There is a new head, Charles Dulfer, of the Iraq Survey Group. We need to let him get in there and complete the work that Dr. K started. Dr. K did a great job working on the Iraq Survey Group. We very much appreciate his service. It's difficult work, but he has pointed out that they need to complete their work.
You're saying that you still expect weapons to be found when the president, the vice president, Powell, and so forth have basically written that off?
Helen, I think I've addressed this question over the last couple of days. What we know is that Saddam Hussein's regime was a gathering threat. In a post-September 11th world, it's important that we confront those threats before it's too late. And Dr. K himself has stated that it was a very dangerous place. The president talked about you had a dangerous man in a dangerous part of the world. And after September 11th, this president is acting decisively to make sure that we are doing everything we can to protect the American people, because we want to do everything we can to prevent something like that from ever happening again. But that the work of the Iraq Survey Group is ongoing, and they have already found that he was in material breach of Security Council Resolution 1441. I would remind you that that was a unanimous, Helen, that was a unanimous resolution that said, Saddam Hussein, you have one final opportunity to comply or face serious consequences. And as I pointed out yesterday, if the inspectors had found even half of what Dr. K's team through the Iraq Survey Group has already uncovered, they would have had to find his regime in clear violation of 1441. And so we're going to let their work continue. I'm not going to get into prejudging the outcome of their work. It's ongoing. But we already know that they have reconfirmed.
You're doing a beautiful job of filibustering.
Thank you, Helen. We have already reconfirmed that it was the right decision to remove Saddam Hussein from power. The world, I think a lot of people say so. The world is a safer and better place. The world is a safer and better place because Saddam Hussein has been removed from power. America is more secure. It was the right decision then, and we know that it was the right decision today.
That was Scott McClellan, the White House press secretary, responding to reporters' questions, Helen Thomas, and that was not Terry Moran of ABC. Ray McGovern, CIA analyst, your response to McClellan's spin.
I just have to admire Helen Thomas for being able to laugh. I really sympathize with Scott McClellan. I mean, he's arguing an impossible brief. What I like is real conservatives, not NAO ones, but real ones like George Will, who says right out, we can't have retrospective justifications, end quote, for this war. The war was fought because of weapons of mass destruction, and they turned out not to be there. The war was not fought because Iraq was out of compliance with 1441. I mean, if wars are fought on that basis, Israel would long since have been, there would have been a war launched against Israel for the 10 times as many resolutions of the UN Security Council that Israel was and remains in violation of. So in our first paper, Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity gave Colin Powell an A for performance on the 5th of February, but a C-minus for content, because the issue was not the UN versus Saddam Hussein. The issue was whether Saddam Hussein was a threat to anyone. And now we know that that he was a threat to no one, not even his immediate neighbors. And just as a footnote, and this is really interesting, so maybe it's worth more than a footnote, Colin Powell, in February of 2001, said precisely that. He said Saddam Hussein has been unable to reconstitute his weapons program, that he had no weapons of mass destruction, and was not only not that kind of a threat, a strategic threat, but he was not even a threat, a conventional threat to his immediate neighbors. He said that in Cairo, and we have it on tape, okay? Now, why is it? Why is it that it took an Australian journalist doing a documentary on all this to go into a listening booth and listen to the tapes of what Condoleezza Rice, and she said the same thing 3 months later, what Condoleezza Rice and Colin Powell had said before 9/11. You know, everyone says 9/11 changed everything. Does that mean that all of a sudden, before 9/11, Saddam Hussein had, as Powell and Rice said, no weapons of mass destruction, and then, whoops, 9/11 comes. Hey, now they have weapons of mass destruction? Well, if you look at the serious people, if you look at the Carnegie Endowment folks who put out that wonderful, wonderful report, you'll see that there was a bell curve. You'll see that in 2002, everyone all of a sudden said that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, and people like David Kaye were taken in. I dare say, I have to sort of admit, that out of our postmortem over the last month, veteran intelligence professionals for sanity faced up to our record, and our record wasn't as good as we thought it should be, because we still believed that there would be some weapons of mass destruction found. And the reason we believed that was sort of a violation of our professional ethic. We let ourselves be swayed by emotion. The President of the United States said that 10 times. So did everyone else. We're Americans. The benefit of the doubt would have to go to the president, because no president would say it 10 times and lie about it. And in that case, we let our emotion or our devotion or our patriotism, to use that word, inform or influence our judgment. And so rather than saying, we don't think they're going to find anything, we said, we think they'll find something, but certainly not enough to justify a war of aggression.
Former CIA analyst Ray McGovern, we're going to go to break and then go across the ocean to Britain to hear about the Hutton Report and to hear about the top two executives of the BBC being forced to resign. Stay with us.
Flybush to the moon and let him play among the stars. Let him see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, go away. In other words, we won't miss you. You'll be happy out in space. You'll feel the king of all you see. You won't have to deal with people who insist on being free. And when you go, take Cheney and leave the earth safe for peace. You can be our Star Wars spinning high above the earth. You won't be here to see our transformation and rebirth. In other words, hit the road. In other words, don't come back here. Floating out in space, you'll see the earth in all her grace. Perhaps you'll start to grasp the oneness of the human race. Until you do, stay above and leave the earth safe for love.
Flybush to the moon, peace to resistance. Here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report, I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Well, a judicial inquiry in Britain has cleared Prime Minister Tony Blair of exaggerating intelligence claims about Iraq in the lead-up to the invasion. The inquiry headed by Lord Hutton blamed the BBC for airing what it described as unfounded allegations that the British government had sexed up intelligence about Iraq. In response to the Hutton report, BBC Chairman Gavin Davies submitted his resignation, and the BBC issued an apology for inaccuracies in its original report. Following Davies' resignation, BBC Director General Greg Dyke also resigned.
The BBC's original report on May 29th led to a chain of events that resulted in the apparent suicide in July of David Kelly. Kelly was the British weapons expert who was identified publicly as the source for the BBC story. The Hutton Report is being widely viewed as a whitewash by critics of the Iraq invasion. Greg Dyke was harshly critical of former communications director Alistair Campbell, who spent yesterday doing a series of interviews stating he'd always told the truth and that he'd been vindicated by Lord Hutton. Dyke called Campbell, quote, remarkably ungracious, and said Lord Hutton's conclusions were, quote, quite clearly wrong on some points of law. We now go across the ocean to Britain to speak with Glenn Rangwala, who is lecturer in politics at Cambridge University in Britain, also writes a weekly column for the Independent of London, and joins us in Greg Palace joins us in the studio here in New York, investigative reporter with BBC's Newsnight and author of the best-selling book, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy. We welcome you both to Democracy Now.
Yeah, one thing I do want to make clear,
Greg
though,
Palast.
Yeah, this is Greg Palast, is that this is not just a British issue. Dr. Kelly was the advisor not only to Tony Blair, but to the United Nations and George Bush. So when he said that this stuff about 45 minutes, there were headlines in Britain that said literally Brits 45 minutes to doom from Saddam's bombs. Saddam Hussein 1 year from a bomb. That this was, in Kelly's words, spin, all spin, okay? And this is the information that not only went to Blair, but went to Bush. And Bush often, for example, in the case of this bogus Niger uranium game, our own CIA said this is all nonsense. And so the White House contacted Blair to verify the information when the CIA said it's nonsense. So you have to understand, we're not talking about just whether Tony Blair lied. We're talking about whether George Bush lied. Now, we know the information is false. See, now you have to understand, Lord Hutton, and that's very important. When these guys put on their wigs, they circle the wagons. So the elite definitely decided that it had to save its own skin and wigs there. You know, I can say that I report for Newsnight BBC program, which ran one of the two stories. And by the way, you have to understand that the Hutton Report blasted and tore apart this Andrew Gilligan, a reporter for a competitor show, frankly, today. But they cleared my program, Newsnight, because we had enough sense to record Dr. Kelly and get his words exactly. And so they couldn't take off after us. And you have to understand, I mean, that this business about Saddam Hussein having weapons that he could launch in 45 minutes. That came from an Iraqi exile group, which issued a statement saying that we believe that the material is, quote, a crock of sh-. That's what they reported, and that was reported in The Guardian. And this is what Blair, and then by extension, our president, sent our kids in, and 500 of our kids are now dead. So this is serious stuff. You have to understand, I'm also... You have to understand, you can tell from my accent, those who don't know me yet, I've been basically exiled to report in England. Because in America, when we had a president say, oh, here's this boogeyman with the weapons of mass destruction, and the Prime Minister of Britain said the same thing, BBC reporters thought, well, shouldn't we check that out and try to get some sources and find out whether that's the real information they're getting on the inside? That didn't happen in the United States. You had like we just heard former CIA people say, we'd like to tell you what really happened. But in BBC, we actually went out and tried to get people. We got Dr. Kelly to give us the insight. He's the number one expert. He was the number one expert. And what happened was is that they decided to go hang the messengers, the reporters, for going out and getting the story. Now, I'm personally a bit nervous because what's happening here now is this is going to be the excuse. After all, BBC is a government-sponsored outlet, and it's always been, though, a tremendous open and independent platform. With the loss of our independent leaders, the question becomes, do we now become the British Izvestia? And that's a really chilling possibility.
Glenn Rangwala, if you could summarize what the Hutton Report said.
Well, the Hutton Report examined two very narrow issues. Firstly, it decided right at the start of the report and without any explanation not to examine essentially the case for war that was made. It decided that Lord Hutton decided that he wouldn't look into whether or not these claims were true or not. that were made by President Bush, by Tony Blair, and by the different governments about Iraq having these weapons. He says that's outside his remit. And so he decides to look at one very narrow claim made by the BBC reporter in his first report, that the government knowingly inserted one claim about Iraq being able to launch weapons in 45 minutes into the report, knowing it was false. Now, if he had said the government suspected it was untrue or it may have been seen to be questionable, then that wouldn't have been an issue. But the fact that he said that the government knew it was false was seized upon by Lord Hunn to show that there was actually some doubt about the report. They didn't know one way or the other if it was true or not. It had come from an exiled opposition group, the Iraqi National Accord, and they had some faith in this this organization to provide reliable information. So there were varying opinions, and the Hunton process heard from people with different opinions on that precise claim. On the basis of that very narrow distinction between whether they think it's absolutely false or whether they think it was questionable, Lord Hunton condemned the journalist in question, Andrew Gilligan, for putting out an inaccurate report. He secondly castigated the BBC as a whole for not apologising and retracting that claim straight away. So on those two points, he found the BBC at fault. He didn't look at the credibility of the people in the government who were making claims that they still believed at the time that the claim that was being made about weapons being launchable within 45 minutes. He does take a very critical perspective towards journalists who were drawing attention to the problems in the government's reports. And for that reason, many people have seen the whole process, the whole nature of the report as being very heavily biased towards the government, towards the establishment, and taking with a very dim view of anybody who questions it as a sort of instinctive reaction by the author of the report. And so that very difference in tone towards the two different sets of individuals has led many to question the judge's impartiality in this process. Lord Hunton was a judge in Northern Ireland for much of his career, where he presided over the so-called Diplock trials, in which essentially government information was taken at face value in the conviction of individuals who weren't able to launch a defense of their own rights.
Well, Glenn Rangwala, I'd like to ask you, in terms of the impact that this is going to have on the press in England, what Greg Palace was raising before, what's been the reaction of the private commercial press operations to this to Lord Hutton's report, and what do you see as the impact of these resignations and this unprecedented blast from the government toward the BBC?
Yes, it's worth filling you in on a bit of background here, because one thing that the government had in mind in May when it launched its broadside upon the BBC was that essentially journalists were becoming too critical of its approach. Firstly, it was the journalists themselves, but secondly, it was intelligence professionals. From very soon after the war, from April, a number of people from within the intelligence services were talking quite openly to journalists. I myself was involved in a number of cases, far beyond the particular instance of David Kelly, where intelligence people, either recently retired or serving intelligence officers, were speaking openly and critically to journalists about the way the government had handled the whole Iraq situation. And the government was frankly scared of that. They didn't want the truth about their approach to come out. And they specifically didn't want it to come out through the BBC, which is still respected by the majority of the population of the country. And so what they did was they picked on one particular instance. They could have picked on many, but they picked on one instance that the BBC had reported one intelligence-linked professional individual, David Kelly, and tried to launch a major attack on the BBC using that as its focus for its attack. The attempt has been to try to firstly destroy the reputation of the BBC's reporting critically on the government, but secondly to dissuade in people from within the intelligence services to speak to journalists.
And there have been some polls that have come out that have shown that a majority of the British people are questioning this report as a whitewash?
Yes, indeed. I mean, most people thought that Lord Hunton was going to look into the truthfulness or otherwise of the government's case for war. From the very beginning of his report, he says he's not going to look at that and instead launches an attack on the BBC. So to many people, I think quite naturally, that seemed to miss the focus of what people thought the whole inquiry was about. And one should see David Kelly in that context. He'd been working on Iraq for 12 years. He'd been putting out information. He'd been involved in investigations and his own inspections within Iraq. And he'd been making the case for most of that 12 years that Iraq actually was in possession of chemical or biological weapons. And over the space of late 2002, early 2003, he was coming around to a different opinion. He'd given speeches and he'd written an article that was unpublished about how there were certain aspects of the government's case that were dubious. So he was shifting his opinion in that regard. Now, that was quite well known to most people in this country. But Lord Hutton doesn't look into that. He doesn't look into, in one line of his whole 270-page report, the actual nature of Dr. Kelly's beliefs about Iraq's weapons. And to me, that seems to be quite a severe abnegation of his responsibilities.
Greg Palast, yes. Last comment.
Yeah, well, you have to remember what's now happened is that this kind of pall of fear has now gone across the newsrooms, whether it's BBC or anywhere else, because there's no First Amendment, there's no freedom of speech in Britain, don't forget. The other thing is that this has cast a real chill on any sources we might have, because the government has outed a source. Basically, we have a suicide, which was the government virtually put a gun to this guy's head, because that's the way the British culture works. You have to understand, what they did was, just like we are now hunting for the person in the White House that outed the name of Plame, this character, Alistair Campbell, who worked for Blair, with Tony Blair's knowledge, came up with a scheme to out the name of their own intelligence agency. Dr. Kelly was not outed by the BBC. So this means that what they're saying is anyone who ever speaks to the press will come and get you. And that's dangerous stuff. And believe me, I'm sure that George Bush is happy that word has gone forth.
And, Greg, I want to note that you've got a CD out now. We're talking about weapons of mass destruction, mass deception. You've got Weapon of Mass Instruction.
Yes, Weapon of Mass Instruction, Greg Palast, Live and Uncensored, which was produced by Jello Biafra of Dead Kennedy's fame. This is my way of raising some legal defense funds for my various lawsuits against my work in several continents. And so we're trying to raise a little cash to save ourselves from the bombardment from the guys who don't really like to be investigated by investigative reporters. But this is Greg Palast, still reporting.
Greg Palast, I want to thank you for being with us, investigative reporter with BBC's Newsnight, also author of The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, and Glenn Rangwala, speaking to us from Britain, lecturer in politics at Cambridge University, also writes weekly column for The Independent of London, was the researcher who discovered Britain's Iraq weapons dossier was stolen from a California doctoral student's thesis. And that does it for the program, if you'd like to get a copy. You can call 1-800-881-2359. That's 1-800-881-2359. Our website is democracynow.org, where you can get all sorts of links to information that we've talked about on Democracy Now! That's democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Broadcasting on Pacifica radio stations, NPR radio stations, on Free Speech TV at channel 9415 of Dish Network, and on public access TV stations around the country. A very special hello to WMUA in Massachusetts, that's just joined broadcasting Democracy Now!, and to Hadley Community Access TV and to Cambridge Community Television. That does it for the show. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdul-Qudus, Anna Nogara, Elizabeth Press, Jeremy Scahill. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.